Thanks for listening and for being a part of Jason Q's Citizen and Friends on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello and welcome to the Jason Q Citizen and Friends program. As we are in Saturday in Australia and in some parts of the world, it's still Friday evening. I hope you've had a great week and I hope you're set for a greater weekend. We are certainly going through a very, very swift change, and what we're seeing on our side of the fence is the evidence is starting to stack up. And it is almost undeniable at this point. We were told for a long time that the contradictions of the establishment would be part of their undoing, and those contradictions are glaringly obvious. And you only need to troll your social media pages for the memes that generally sum them up. For example, here's one from a tweet from a page called A Home for Plague Rats. The same government trying to take your guns away is pushing for world war. Why would they want us unarmed? Seems as in Ukraine now would be the time to arm the populace, not disarm, unless, of course, they're rooting for the other team. And then there's another one that's doing the rounds today, which is terrific because it's got a picture of George Carlin giving the finger. And it says this: I don't want a digital ID. I don't want a social credit score. I don't want an electric car. I don't want a great reset. I don't want to eat bugs. I don't want to be locked down. And I don't want to rent my home. If you have a problem with that, and George Carlin tells you how it is. Now, what's really interesting is when you look at the various Telegram pages and the Chans as they are, you get a bit of an insight into intel that may or may not be on the money. But what you do get is something that makes you stop and think. And here's the point. This week, I came to the conclusion that the Great Awakening will be as a result directly of the Great Injury. Injury equals awakening. And what I mean by that the more and more that we sadly see people injured by this vaccine, more and more people will eventually wake up. Here in Australia over the last couple of weeks, again, lots of sports people are succumbing to heart attack. And it was Peter Matera, the AFL star, who, whilst chopping wood at 50-something years of age, had a heart attack. And it was his friends and family that are now suggesting that it may well be the vaccine. Well, of course, that's denied and denied and denied. But it can't be for much longer. It simply cannot. You just can't deny it into obscurity. And I found this information that came out in a post. Hello, Anons. I just want to give you guys a glimpse of what's to come for the next few weeks. Most of the major alphabets have been given packets to disseminate on the following matter. Turns out you guys are right. The vaccine does cause injury. This bit's been blacked out here, obviously, so that no one senses it. Media execs have been in conference this past week with federal agents trying to find some possible way to spin this and soften the blow. You're starting to see some articles trickle down that never would have seen the light of day last year. However, they will have to report the whole truth about the vaccine and the virus and the lab origin because the US is being blackmailed by the Chinese government, they're saying. Expect the scandal to break next week. I want each and every one of you to prepare for the worst, namely is the psychological aftershock of neurotypicals being unplugged from their illusion. Some people will become angry, some will become violent, and others will break. I don't care how much your family wronged you over the years and elections, but you must be there for one another if you are to expect society to have any hope of repair afterwards. After all, you are victims of a ruthless psyop. Be the person and have the people see you as the leader you are after all of this. And there it probably summarizes where we are today. We've been following along. We've been trying to wake people up, and it's not to score points or to get a job or to become famous. It's simply to save the people against the common enemy. And the common enemy is the people who were elected to serve us, who decided to take a shortcut and serve the people who financed them. And those financiers seem to want to run the agenda whereby the world is now governed by corporations who hijack sovereign nations and tell them how it all works. You know that? We know that. But the majority of the population doesn't. On today's first hour, as we fill in for Charles and Tanya today, and they should be back on deck next week, we will talk to Sonia Bailey, a regular on my show and full of information about what's going on in the world, and also as we approach what we have to do next, which is to protect for our own survival. So don't go anywhere. When we come back, we're going to meet Sonia and we're going to get started in a new world that's emerging as we navigate the pitfalls of the old world as it appears to be crashing down all around us. You're on TNT Radio.
Digging deeper into the news.
It's the topics that matter to me.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Jason Q, Citizen and Friends. Sonia Bailey, are you there?
I am. How are you today, Jason?
I'm good, thank you. And how are you going, Sonia, post-election in the new world? Have you noticed any shifts or differences in regular life?
Oh, look, I can't say that I have, but I think, you know, as we sort of came out of lockdown last year and then as we've come out of this election cycle this year, it's definitely had me sit and review my perspective on what I'm doing with my life, how I'm parenting my children, what I want for my own home, and how that sort of looks as a member of the local community. You know, the first week after the election, I'll admit I was pretty down, as I think quite a lot of people were. It definitely didn't turn out how we were hoping, but I can't say that it didn't turn out how we weren't expecting. It's been interesting, as you mentioned just earlier, over the past week or two, to see what's actually been coming out of mainstream media. All of the things that people like you and I have been saying for the last couple of years are now being reported on in the same light as we have spoken on it. So it's quite interesting to see that they're actually saying what we've been saying all along.
Yes, all of it's coming true, isn't it? You know, the injuries are starting to seep out, the interest rates, the inflation, the economic situation is not as good as it was painted. You've got the Labor Party coming out now and saying that, it's not as good as the Liberal government had said it was, which is typical of any new government when they know that they're going into a downward spiral, which we are. And there's a lot more. There's energy pricing. You've got the CEO now of, I think it was Integral Energy, or was it AGL, coming out saying we need to put the coal back on. Here we are. We've had this whole election cycle, this three-year ramp up, and all of a sudden everything that they've sold us on, they're going, oh, sorry, we got that one wrong. We're going to have to go back and go back to what we already knew. Yeah, thanks, guys. Look, it's the ultimate deception to be elected, to gain electoral advantage by deception is fraud, you know, for want of a better term. If you would say that about financial, it would be fraud, but whether it's electoral elevation to become a member of parliament, well, that's a different story. There probably isn't a crime for that. You can say whatever you like to get yourself elected. So we've uncovered this disgusting situation now that everything that we have been saying is now being verified daily, and we're being ignored for being the oracles or the prophets in being able to show this prophecy. And yet we've now got to navigate where we go next, because we know that if they were denying the problem, now they're probably going to deny the solution and want to just kick on with what they're doing. For example, the Labor Party or the Labor government are not going to come out and go, oh, well, we need coal now, so we'll just renege. You know they're going to push forward with their green agenda harder than ever, and you know that it's destined to fail. So as an individual, what do you do? Do you just go along with it? You can't. You've got to go your own way on this, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think something key, well, two key things you've touched on there is, you know, as far as sort of this process of honest elections, I don't think we've ever experienced a completely honest election. That's why you and I didn't win seats, because we ran as honest politicians. We were willing to ask those hard questions. We were willing to expose the truth and speak with transparency and accountability. So, of course, we're not going to win. The higher-ups don't want us to win. But second to that, what we're seeing come out now, as you said, is we're seeing this sort of openness from, you know, the government and energy providers, because they can no longer hide behind the lies they hid behind last year and the year before. And so, you know, we've found ourselves in this place where we have these huge inflation rates. That's no surprise. We said last year and the year before, you print money, you keep getting government handouts, you keep having these government bonuses and these vouchers and these subsidies, all that's going to do is drive up the cost of living. Now we're basically reaping what our government has sown. And we have this now energy crisis, yet we export more coal than we use in Australia. So my question to those energy providers would be, well, where is all the coal going if we have a shortage of energy? And I can already answer that question myself, because when we think of, you know, this sort of one world system, is that they want to push us into a place where we cannot be self-reliant, and therefore we will gladly accept whatever the government instructs us to take, even if we don't think it's our best option. They'll convince us it is our best option. So what we're seeing right now is we have these net zero commitments that are impossible for us to achieve, while coal provides over 70% of our energy. So they've manufactured an energy crisis that will have us squealing for something other than coal. Yet there is more than enough coal to provide the energy needs of our nation.
And this is the great trick, isn't it? So absolutely. You manufacture the crisis and you pretend that you're the saviour at the exact same time. So we've absolutely been played for fools by our government and our media and the general public. The majority that seems to have voted for this new government are the ones that have been deceived or are literally going along with it. Makes you wonder about these Teal independents and what they expect to do over the next 3 years and whether or not they'll be just a one-term wonder, because it's just unbearable to think that there is a whole chain of people thinking that they've somehow got the solution. And yet, even if you measure it on any term, when you go out there and look at what the end result is for the climate, we can only produce 1.3% of the world's emissions. So even if we're perfect and we reduce our emissions back to zero, nothing changes on the planet anyway. Nothing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think you also raise a good point there with the Teal Independents and the Greens that have pushed this net zero agenda. I was reading an article a couple of days ago that said Australia is essentially creating renewable energy infrastructure at a faster rate than any other nation in the world, and yet we still cannot provide the energy that we require. So this is where we sort of find this meeting place between fossil fuel energy creation, renewable sources energy creation, and the actual consumption that we require versus what we actually use. And I'm sure that everybody listening would agree, we use more energy than we really need to. If we were to sort of step back a little bit and go, okay, if I had to halve my power bill, what could I do to reduce my consumption? So I think there's sort of this balance that needs to be struck between what we use and what we need to use, but also where we're actually obtaining those energy sources from.
Don't you think it just sounds ridiculous that we're in this situation, that we have a bargain with ourselves now to somehow cut down our energy use because it may be harming the environment, but we never, ever, ever speak of nuclear energy or even hemp energy or something in those regards that could be abundant, would be abundant, and in fact nuclear would also be virtually free once it's set up. And we wouldn't have to ever worry about our energy source again. But it's like we're convincing ourselves that we have to direct ourselves into a global famine, not only in food production, but obviously energy production and use, etc. Like we have to cull ourselves. It's like it's being written for us, and we're that silly that we just can't see it.
Follow it.
And why aren't we having the nuclear discussion in this country?
Well, it's interesting you say that, because the Liberal Democratic Party had a policy to lift a ban on mining uranium and to actually build nuclear power plants within Australia. It is one of the cleanest sources of energy at the moment. And when you compare the productivity of nuclear now compared to 10 years, 20 years, it's safer, it's cleaner, it's something we can actually do within Australia because we have the land mass to actually accommodate additional power stations. But it's just something that isn't being discussed because people hear the word nuclear and they panic. Because people would rather fly on buzzwords than actually do some research and understand what the article is behind the headline and to then make a conscious decision on what's best for them. But I think that truly what it comes down to is how much money can be made off it. When we are looking at coal as a fossil fuel energy source, the majority of the money on the coal that we make that we mine in Australia is made on our export. It's not made on the retail sales to the usage of Australians that have electricity connected to the house. So we as consumers are not the profit margin. The exporting is the profit margin. And if they can control us and create a bigger profit through these supposed renewable energy sources while also getting a pat on the back from, you know, the UN and the WHO and WEF, then of course our government is going to intentionally lead us into a place where rather than willingly choose to move away from using coal, they're steering us into moving away from using coal, or as we're seeing right now, they're essentially forcing us to move away from coal. But the reality is, if we reduced our consumption and reduced our export, we would have plenty of fossil and renewable energy for our entire nation to live affordably.
Of course we would. And it's so obvious when you just look at the numbers involved with coal. For example, our coal in Australia, Hunter Valley coal, burns 3 times more efficient than any other coal around the world. It yields a 3 times higher energy output. And so if we didn't export this coal to China and to India, then they are forced to purchase inferior coal from Indonesia and the USA. And so that inefficient coal, you have to buy 3 times as much to get the same energy output, or you just put a lot more pollution into the environment if you're concerned about it. At some point, there's got to be some smarties within the green movement are going to go, hang on a second, why are we doing this? Or no one will see it because they are simply compartmentalized and only look within where they are in Australia. And I fear for this as one of the great deceptions in intellectual understanding of what's going on in the world. You can't be in a global world run by globalists and pretend that you can only operate out of Australia. And this is the worst kind of hypocrisy coming out of the current government and the opposition. Tanya Plibersek was one of these people that came out and said that she's not concerned with what happens overseas, only what happens in Australia. And that is the great three-card trick. That provides her with plausible deniability, saying that she's not or can't be a globalist, when in fact she's serving the globalist interests perfectly by doing what she's doing, saying what she's saying. So they always seem to have that one step ahead of the system, whereby the regular mainstream journalists that get the bulk of the following never have to ask the serious question, do they?
No, they don't. And I think that the reality is, as we have experienced ourselves, is that once you're elected into Parliament, as long as you've got your buddies to have your back and slap you on the back and tell you that you're doing a good job, and you've got your international associates that are going to help you virtue signal, you really don't actually have to be accountable and do what's best for the people. You can just go ahead and do what's best for the government and do what's best for the globalists and the socialists and the communists, because they're the ones who will funnel you the money for the coal that you're exporting. They're the ones who will donate to your $10,000 a plate luncheon. They're the ones who are basically aid and abet what's not best for the people, but is 100% best for the globalists. And this is where we find ourselves in this situation at the moment where, realistically, we don't have such an energy crisis that we can't buy petrol. We don't have such a crisis that we can't turn on a light in our home or, you know, toast some bread in the toaster. We haven't quite reached that point. We're not on water restrictions. Okay, the price of food and fuel has increased, but it's not gotten to the point where people can't feed themselves at all. It's just gotten to the point where people need to begin thinking, okay, how much electricity am I actually using? How much fuel do I really need this week? You know, those kind of questions are the ones that people are beginning to ask themselves, and I think that that's a logical way to head, because not only would it help us as individuals in our financial aspect to review where are we spending our money, is that actually vital to our ability to work and study and live, or is it kind of superfluous spending? Beyond that, it doesn't hurt for us to sort of do a bit of a personal stock take and look at how much energy we're using, what are we contributing to the environment and the community versus what we consume from the environment and the community. And those are all very reasonable conversations to have as an individual and as a family, because those do have a knock-on impact. And so this is where we sort of find ourselves heading from this strong reliance on the government to decide how much of something we're allowed to use and how much it's going to cost. And we start sort of looking internally to what can we actually do to benefit our own lives without outsourcing to the government or welfare or expecting our boss to give us a pay rise.
A lot to talk about there as we plan for where we go next. We're going to take a quick break, Sonia. When we come back, let's talk about some survival methods and techniques that people can consider as they plan for how they're going to address the next 6 months as we move towards 2023 and, of course, the next year ahead, as who knows where we're headed. Don't go anywhere. You're on TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Michael Parker.
You've always been associated with the left and the progressive movements. Why is it that you can see some of these infringements on liberty and civil rights, but many of your peers cannot, and actually detract from you for doing so?
Yeah, that is a great and timely question. I just want to note that, you know, as I said a minute ago, in the United States, for sure, it's the left doing the bad things, and conservatives and libertarians are up in arms, and the left isn't. And I'll talk about that in a minute. But, you know, in Britain, it's the same script with a conservative leader, Boris Johnson. And yep. In Australia, it's an even worse place down the line of fascism, you know, also with conservative leadership. And in Canada, it's liberal leadership with the same script. So these are transnational, transpartisan scripts now coming from above the level of nation states, above the level of parliaments and, you know, congresses.
Deprogram with Michael Parker on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Nearly every day, we hear dire predictions about climate change from the media establishment, Hollywood, and politicians. They tell us that the world is coming to an end because normal human activity is raising the temperature to dangerous levels. To avoid a hellish apocalypse, they warn us we must immediately change our lifestyles and our very way of life. But are these sensational claims based on solid empirical science? Do the facts line up with the hype? Well, an increasing number of scientists are becoming skeptical. We covered what many of these scientists had to say in our first groundbreaking film, Climate Hustle. From overhyped claims about severe weather events, temperatures, rising sea levels, and even disappearing polar bears, Climate Hustle peeled back the hype and looked at the facts, facts that simply don't add up to any reason for alarm. So this begs the questions. Why would those claiming a global warming catastrophe spread a false narrative? What would motivate them? Why would they try to hustle you? Are they trying to control the climate or you? Well, those are the questions we're going to explore in this film. And the answers may shock you. Order your DVD, Blu-ray, or digital copy today of Climate Hustle 2.
To find out more, go to climatehustle2.com.
I've got muscular dystrophy. That means my muscles are weak and it can be hard to breathe. During COVID-19, kids like me are at a greater risk, but the Muscular Dystrophy Association is here to help.
MDA is what ensures they receive critical medical care at one of over 150 care centers.
COVID-19 won't stop us. Please visit helpmda.org.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT Radio.live.
Welcome back to Jason Q, Citizen and Friends. I'm talking with Sonia Bailey on today's show. We're talking about ways in which we can prepare and map out where we go next in our own lives post-election in Australia 2022, whereby we switched from conservative to a progressive government, but really we just changed the colours of the globalist play. And so whilst we concentrate on our own lives and being parents and our own homes and our own careers, we do have to keep an eye on global events and prepare accordingly. So, Sonia, moving forward now, where do we go next in terms of just being that step ahead of the rest of the people? Is it a case of just becoming almost totally self-sufficient, or are there ways that we can consolidate and work together within our local communities with like-minded people?
Look, I think that's really going to come down to the individual or the family, because obviously everybody is in slightly different circumstances. Some people don't have a mortgage, they own their home outright. Some people have a mortgage, but they're keen to sell and move sort of to more rural locations. Some people rent, you know, so it really depends on how locked in people are to their location as to what they can realistically do in the near and the far future. For me and my family, last year during lockdown, I thought, you know, this is going to be a really good opportunity to get out in the yard and do some gardening with the kids and not let it go anywhere else. So I actually joined a group on Facebook called The Healthy Patch, and they run an online course that helps you step by step to reinvigorate your yard into a garden that you can grow your own fruit and vegetables from. And they, in the course, they explain how you can do everything from just a couple of square metres in your yard to a full acreage if you have an acreage. So it sort of accommodates every possible lifestyle and end goal, whether it's that you just want to grow a few veggies so that you've always got something on hand, or whether you want to be fully self-sufficient and purely live off your own fruit and veg, everything that you grow, and not outsource anything. So through the Healthy Patch, I did their course. I think it cost me $97 and it's a six-week course. And it just really helped me, A, get hands-on with the kids, but B, begin to really think about where our food comes from, what we can trust, what we can grow ourselves, and begin to make some personal decisions about what is best for us as a family, but also what is best for us as far as, you know, sort of our trust level in big pharma and big farms. You know, it used to be 30, 40 years ago when you went to the butcher and you got a piece of meat, you'd choose the fattiest piece of meat because the fat that was marbled through was delicious and it was so good for you. But the amount of toxins, antibiotics and glyphosate that are used in growing grains and feeds for animals, now that fatty part of the meat is essentially the most toxic part of the animal. And we've also, you know, leaned towards lean meats and, you know, certain cuts of meat as being more healthy for you than others. So I don't live on a block that's big enough for me to farm large animals. I can have chickens or ducks, but that's about it. So earlier this year, I came across a group which ironically is called Doomsday Preppers Australia. And they range everything from people who just want to make jams from the fruit they grow in their yard to people who really are looking to go completely off the grid, disconnect themselves from, you know, provided electricity and water, and they supply everything on their own block, take care of everything themselves, harvest their own rain, the works, like the full, completely self-sufficient people. So groups like that have been really beneficial in helping me navigate what works for us financially, what works for us as a family, and sort of how deep into that kind of doomsday prepping we actually want to get. And through that group, I actually met a gentleman who is a cattle farmer in Queensland, and he organically feeds his animals. So I've actually gone halves with a friend and bought an entire cow through him, which will provide close to 2 years' worth of meat for the two families. And it comes cryovacs, we can put it in the freezer, You know, and we've even gone so far as to have a petrol-powered generator that can run the freezer and heating and cooling in our home if it really gets to the point that we need to look at alternate sources. So I think that, generally speaking, now is probably a really good time for people to take stock of their reliance on external providers to their home, whether that's their employer that they're relying on for finances, the electricity company, the petrol, the food that they eat. How much of that can we actually start taking care of ourselves? Because not only will that reduce our reliance on government, it'll also reduce our ingesting of, you know, what we know of probably not the greatest quality foods and meats. And it also, in reality, it helps with the green movement because we're growing more in our yards rather than having concrete. We're feeding ourselves rather than relying on farms to provide for us. And then, of course, we have the composting and all of the other types of reducing, reusing and recycling that we can engage in our own homes. And that then carries on to benefit the community and the environment. Now, I also am in the position at the moment where I can cook for other people and I can make soups and load the freezer and have those things available for people. So, you know, that's a little bit of assistance to the community. And really all I've had to do is just look at myself and what time I can put into it and what I can do literally in my own backyard.
That's fantastic, isn't it? So there's not a whole lot of big changes that you need to do in your life. You just sort of flow where your interests are and you just work backwards from there.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I actually really loved about the Healthy Patch, and that's why I signed up to do their course. Because at the time we were looking at having to put, you know, we want to put a swim spa in our backyard because I had surgery on my back a couple of years ago, and heck, who doesn't want a spa, right? So yeah. We were sort of looking at where is this going to fit, what room do we have to use? And by doing the Healthy Patch program, I was able to sort of confidently go out into my yard and build garden beds and buy plants that, you know, bear fruit and vegetables that I actually enjoy eating with the confidence that it wasn't money wasted, it was money well spent. And I can now move into sort of upgrading that a little bit further and getting more of a permaculture role going on in my yard so that basically the yard begins to take care of itself and it becomes sort of a one family supermarket out in our yard.
And so how long does it take to set something like this up to get a return on it? Like, you've obviously got to phase this type of thing in, but I mean, if you're going to, for example, get chickens, I mean, it's not long before they're laying eggs, but if you're planting trees and the fruit trees, they're going to take the longest. But if you're planting vegetables in a veggie patch, you're probably going to get results within a few months, right?
Yeah, correct. And look, really, that comes down to a couple of factors. The first factor is your location and what sort of environment you live in. Now, the Healthy Patch and also Daly's Fruit, which is Daley, if you search Daly's online, they're actually a grower that sells fruit and vegetables all the way from seeds right up to mature fruiting plants. And they actually have some really great information on their website about the climate, location, and what sort of plants are suitable for your location. But they also have a lot of information on how to care for those plants and get the best harvest. So the information is definitely out there and quite easy to find. So once you have decided what you want to put where in your yard and what sort of, you know, fruits and veggies and things you actually want to grow, the next step is to decide whether you want that to be something that you phase in over the next 12 months or whether it's something that you really want to have a return on as quickly as possible. And the reason I say that is that if you can afford to spend 12 to 18 months turning your yard into a full-grown grocery store, then you can buy seeds and seedlings and it's a lot cheaper, but it does take longer to get a return. Whereas if you have a little bit more money to spend, you can actually buy fully matured trees from companies such as Daley's, D-A-L-E-Y, and they will be ready to fruit in the very next season. So that essentially means within 3 to 6 months of you purchasing the plant, it's producing fruit or vegetables for you. So there are ways to have a faster return. I found that it took us probably 2 weeks as a family pottering in the yard to build the garden beds that we wanted to have and to get the plants that we wanted. And we sourced most of our plants from Lee Rowan's Garden World and from Daly's. And it just allowed us to, A, spend time as a family, B, create something that we could be proud of, and C, invest in our future knowing that this is something that will bind us as a family as well as provide food for us. And then being that I'm homeschooling one of our children while the other attends school, we can then start to look at recipes that we can use as far as making jams and pies and those kind of things. And if you do have a large property, even if you have anywhere from an acre to 5 acres, you can begin to grow things that you can then barter with neighbours or sell or, go to markets and sell. So there's sort of a lot of opportunity to expand as big as you want. There's really no upper limit. It just depends on how much effort you want to put in, how much you're willing to spend, and more critically, how much room you've actually got to work in.
So on a normal suburban block, and I mean, that's very different if you're in northwestern Sydney today, you're probably looking at 300 square metres, but in the rest of the world, you're probably looking at 600 to 800 square metres is probably the average, which is somewhere like a fifth of 1 acre. It's possible that you can grow enough food on there to be the family supermarket, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I recently discovered a book called Retro Suburbia. And one of the case studies that they cover as an example of how to sort of utilize a smaller block, this family had a tenth of an acre to work with. So that's roughly 100 square meters. So that's not a huge amount of space. And in that 100 square meters, they were able to have chickens and a water tank and grow enough fruit and vegetables to feed their family without outsourcing for fruit and vegetables. And they had a beehive that they harvested enough honey from, and they were able to sell their surplus and make a single full-time wage in a year off their property. So
that's
you
incredible.
Really don't need a lot to have a really incredible return. It's just a matter of finding the right resources to help you get on your way.
And so there it is. You need to obviously have thought about it enough, but be able to find where to go. And so what you've provided already, Daly's Fruit and Healthy Patch, which we'll talk about a bit further, I think. And then you just mentioned Retro Suburbia, which is a book.
Yeah, so Retro Suburbia, the idea behind that is that you really don't need a lot of land. And as you mentioned, unless you sort of live in a rural area, you probably live on a quarter acre or less. And it seems to be the smaller the block, the larger the house, and therefore the less ground space people have available. So what Retro Suburbia does is it talks through the process of teaming up with your friends or neighbours. So I have a family here in the same suburb that I live in, and then I have friends that live probably 20, 30 minutes away that are doing a similar sort of thing on their block of land. So the idea is that you no longer have a quarter of an acre to work with, you have 3/4 of an acre to work with. And you work together so that one family might have, chickens and ducks and be doing all the composting, and another family might be growing all the vegetables, and another family might be growing all of the fruit. So you're then working as a community to be able to produce enough fruit and vegetables to feed those three families, but to also then sell the excess. Now, what we are seeing come through at the moment is people like Dan Andrews, who are trying to implement laws that restrict what people can grow on their own land. Now, of course, I absolutely oppose that, firstly, because I think you should be able to do whatever you want on your own land, and secondly, because it's a blatant attempt to block people from doing what it is that we're essentially trying to do, and that's be self-reliant. So Retro Suburbia is very much about the community aspect of making things work as far as bartering and working together, but it does also cover how to work on very small blocks. And it also goes into how to utilize rainwater, how to utilize compost. Because for most people, we think, well, compost is just the food you don't eat and you throw it in a specific bin and it composts down and you put it places. But when you actually go into the depth of composting, it's actually very important the types of food waste that you group together as to what nutrients they give off and how they can feed specific plant groups in a better manner. So Healthy Patch and Retro Suburbia really go into that aspect of everything from the materials you build your garden beds out of, the kind of watering equipment that you use, the plastics that you use. So it's not just about the environment, it's also about what could leach into your soil and your food and that kind of thing. And when I first thought, you know, last year I thought, oh, I want to do the garden up and I want to sort of, you know, have something that the kids and I can do as a family while we're in lockdown, I very quickly realized that it's actually very easy to do something like the course through the Healthy Patch and to be quite confident to go out into your yard and pick up what you most likely already have and to start utilizing that to your own benefit. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with us as families starting to do what's best for us. And that's actually going to improve the environment and decrease our household costs.
So it makes a lot of sense to understand where you want to go, get the right resources lined up, and then get yourself involved in a course, as you did for what, under $100 gets you in there, and you get it, and you get something, and you can do that with the kids as well. And so that you both get a really good idea of how to set yourself up and to understand what to go to next. Could you put a cost on what you've spent so far in terms of being able to set up your home to become a food production unit?
Oh, look, I would put it at under $1,000. But admittedly, a lot of what we have used to build our garden beds has been leftover scrap that we've gotten from other places. So, for example, if you keep your eye out on curbside collections or on Facebook when people are getting rid of things, we have used discarded corrugated iron and discarded fence paling for our garden beds. We did buy the compost and the soil mix, and we also bought a petrol-powered mulcher off Facebook so that when we were trimming trees, you know, we've got trees on our property, they need to get trimmed every year. When we were trimming those trees, the larger trunks and logs we would cut down to use for the fireplace, but all of the smaller leaves and branches that we didn't need, we would put through the mulcher and then we'd use that back on our garden. So it's just some of those simple tips of sort of thinking outside of the box, and be prepared to lose your grass. You know, 3/4 of my front yard, I've got enough room to park 2 cars in my front yard, and the rest of it is mulched. And we have got fruit trees and a hibiscus and a banksia. We've got frangipanis, and my front yard wouldn't be more than 50 square metres. But in that space, I have got everything from lavender, rosemary, blueberries, strawberries. We've got a mango tree, a cherry tree, an avocado tree. We have a pineapple bush. We have rose bushes. We have a banksia. We have hibiscus. We've got a grapevine. And then throughout the later summer months, on top of all of that mulch, we grow rock melon and watermelon. So you really don't need a huge amount of space to get started. And a lot of that
clearly,
has just
clearly
been
don't.
Through... Seeds and seedlings is usually the cheapest way to get up and running. And you really don't have to invest a huge amount of money. It's more the time that you want to invest in it. You know, my husband works a full-time job, and we did set up during lockdown last year, so it took us 2 weeks as a family to get everything set up and running. And now just once a week we kind of go out into the garden, give everything a prune and a tend and a tidy, and other than that, the way we set it up, it pretty much takes care of itself.
Oh, look, it's fantastic. And I think everyone listening will be going, yes, I want to get involved and do something similar. So we'll continue the discussion. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a bit more with Sonia Bailey about ways to survive moving forward in 2022. You're on TNT Radio.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
Last weekend on Saturday, former President Donald Trump attended a rally in Casper, Wyoming for Republican congressional candidate Harriet Hageman. Trump passionately expressed his continued support for Hageman, whom he endorsed last September in her campaign to oust incumbent Republican Representative Liz Cheney. Toppling neoconservative Liz Cheney, daughter of former Vice President Dick Cheney, will be very important for world peace. Trump made this very clear, saying that Liz Cheney loves endless, nonsensical, bloody, horrible wars that never end. They just never end. The Cheneys are diehard globalists and warmongers who have been plunging us into new conflicts for decades, spilling American blood and spending American treasure all over the world. Trump also slammed Cheney for her vote in support of his second impeachment. All going well, voters will dump her in the Wyoming state primaries in August. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
My name is Latoy Adams. I served in the Army. Being with paralyzed veterans of America, they have showed me so much is possible.
I'm Sean Castle, served in the United States Army. I went from laying in a hospital bed dying to being a professional wheelchair basketball player. And it started with that one moment where there's life. I am unstoppable because Paralyzed Veterans of America is by my side.
We are unstoppable.
Learn more at pva.org.
This is today's news talk and the voice of freedom, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Jason Q, Citizen and Friends. I'm sitting in over the weekend here for Charles Coves and Tanya DeJong, and I'm lucky enough to be joined by Sonia Bailey, and we're having a terrific chat about survival. And before the break, we were talking about how to set up your backyard to be able to produce fruit, vegetables, eggs, even some chickens and some ducks if you need to eat the chickens and the ducks, but you certainly can get some eggs out of them. Sonia, are you breeding chickens to eat or just for the eggs?
At the moment, I don't have chickens, but in my previous property I did, and we didn't eat those chickens. We just kept them for the eggs, and obviously as pets, they're a really easy pet to keep, and that can be a really great responsibility for teaching children how to take care of animals because they're pretty low maintenance. Being that my kids are a little bit younger, we sort of have what we refer to as pet animals and food animals. So we do outsource our food animals. So typically with our food purchases, when we do large meat buys, we'll either buy them direct from the farm, which works out cheaper to have it butchered and buy a whole animal, or we do the good old Costco route where we go and we'll buy a quarter of a lamb or a half a lamb at a time, you know, and it may cost $200 or $300 in a single kit, but you're paying sort of in the vicinity of $7 to $12 a kilo for meat that's been ethically raised and humanely butchered, as opposed to anywhere up to $30, $40, $50 a kilo for your lamb and beef from the supermarket. So the main reason I go that route is purely for my children's sake, because then we can explain this is our pet chicken and this one in the plastic is our eating chicken. So our chickens, we just keep for eggs. We will be getting chickens and ducks, but we're going to wait until winter's over. They tend to settle better into a new home when they're sort of in that spring period. Spring and autumn are the best times to introduce new outdoor animals. So we're going to set up a little pond for them, and we've got a section down the side of our house that's covered, so that will be their home. But chickens and ducks, their poop is really great to be using for fertilizer on your fruit and veg. So they do provide a lot of good aspects, even if you're not raising them for meat purposes. And ducks are incredible insect eaters, so they're really good to keep around in the garden to keep, you know, snails and other little bugs and things at bay, caterpillars and that kind of thing. So they really do serve an excellent purpose. And I think for anyone who is sort of feeling that they really want to get away from a reliance on, you know, big pharma and the government and, you know, supermarket shopping, the first place that I would recommend starting is to do a little bit of research on homesteading, which is more about using what you have within your own home to provide for yourself as much as possible. And there are plenty of Facebook groups, and there's plenty of really good books you can buy on homesteading. The next step up from that is to then get into things like permaculture, which is where I would recommend people sign up to the Healthy Patch, buy books like Retro Suburbia, and that's sort of the next phase of gardening and food propagation for self-sufficiency. And then, of course, your third step, which is what I sort of refer to as doomsday prepping, that's where we're then starting to get into, you know, building a bunker under your house to store food in and buying 2 and 3 years worth of goods to dry store and that sort of thing. And there are doomsday prepper groups on Facebook as well. So I'm actually part of Doomsday Preppers Australia. And you have a full range of people involved in those Facebook groups, everything from the casual, I just want to do something on the weekend that's a bit of a hobby that I can get a return from that I've, you know, grown with my own hands, all the way through to completely off-grid, not connected to power, not connected to water. And some of those groups provide some really great money-saving tips as far as if you are on the grid, what you can help do to reduce your use of electricity and water, ways that you can recycle your grey water to use it on your garden, just some of those really simple tips that can have a really big impact on not just our environmental footprint, but also our financial commitment to those, you know, power, water, if you've got gas on at home, that kind of thing, just to help reduce those costs and improve our environmental impact. As much as I would not consider myself even remotely close to a greenie, I'm more than happy to do something that's going to improve my quality of life, improve my kids' quality of life, reduce our expenses and improve the environment. I mean, why wouldn't we put our hand up for that kind of activity? So for us, we're sort of slowly but surely progressing more towards the doomsday prepper end of the scale. But there are groups out there, homesteading, permaculture, the healthy patch, doomsday preppers, and you can get a huge range of information and decide for yourself what suits for your family, your budget, your physical capabilities. And at the end of the day, it's a massive community of people who are like-minded. And it can give you some confidence and some reassurance. You can ask the questions, you can get the information, and you can start doing some things for yourself.
Gosh, you make it sound so simple, and yet it's obviously a complicated approach, but it's only process, right? So once you get started, as you said, you do your intros through your retro suburbia reading, your healthy patch through getting educated and then realizing where you are. And it was brilliant advice there. So you start with being homesteading, moving to permaculture and then to doomsday prepping, three different levels there. And the one thing that you mentioned there in the end was the idea of that it's a community within a community. So once you're in these organizations and these groups, you can certainly become friends with people in your local area. That's where you're all going to work in the beginning, and being able to consolidate and create your own efficiencies and economies of scale. I love the idea that someone can be the chicken and duck and the composter, someone can grow the veggies, someone can grow the fruit, and then you specialize in what it is that you do. And that bond that you create with others makes a huge difference as you plan to move ahead. Now, once you've got all this up and running, and let's assume society goes on as normal, are you the eccentric one on the block, or are you really making cost savings at this point by running your own show? And is there an advantage to being able to run from home and be organic as well? Seems obvious, but I might as well ask the question.
I think that really depends on your neighbourhood. You know, I live in a dead-end street and everyone pretty much keeps to themselves, but most people around here sort of grow something. You know, and throughout the year you'll see a milk crate go out in the front yard and it'll have a sign on it and it'll be tomatoes or lemons or chocos or whatever it is that people are getting rid of, and they might be free, they might be 50 cents, they might be a dollar. So I think it certainly doesn't hurt in the lead up to sort of preparing yourself for what you want to do to kind of be the nosy neighbour and scope out what everyone else is doing. If it comes to the point that, you know, we see an improvement in this supposed energy crisis and life kind of goes back to normal and mandates get lifted and everybody's honky-dory, I'm still 100% happy with everything that I've done on my property, because it's something that I've educated my children through. And the amount of food that we're producing at the moment, we would still eat that in the future because it's saving us money. And I actually started down this path purely because my older sister sent me a message saying, do you remember when we were kids and our mum used to make preserves? And one of her favourite things that our mum would make was beetroot relish. And she asked me, A, did I remember, and B, how would she go about getting the equipment to make that very specific beetroot relish recipe? And also, she didn't have the recipe, so could I find that for her? So that sort of reinvigorated for me when we were in the early 90s living on large property and we were dirt poor, some of those kind of aspects of preserving and making jams and living off our own produce. And I think that that for us as a family is definitely something we will continue, even if the economy begins to improve and prices begin to drop and wages begin to rise. This is something that we will continue to do as a family. You know, I'm going to be 80 years old in my front yard tending these vegetables. I'm not going anywhere. And so I think that potentially people could consider, if in 6 months or 12 months or 5 years I've invested this money in this time in this yard, am I still going to want to use it? For me, yep, that's an absolute yes.
Well done, Sonia. Look, we've hit the end of the hour. We're going to have to go to the news. And when we come back,
thanks,
I'm going
so
to introduce you to Angie Keats. Thank you very much, Sonia, and have a great weekend out there in the garden. You're on TNT Radio.